All right, folks, welcome to the November Mike and Scotty Live. Scotty Mason on the other end.
Yeah, but we're going to have to hold on here because I found exactly what I need to buy to finish out my night here.
You got to stop that now.
No, I'm telling you, this watch actually tells time if you were stuck in a refrigerator.
Oh, it has its own air supply.
Yeah, it actually plays air supply music.
That would be a useful feature.
Yeah. It's funny, folks. So I'm on this gig where I'm buying everything that comes up as a pop-up ad in my Facebook feed. And so I bought a t-shirt from my alma mater earlier, and now my page is just filled with shirts from the University of Dayton, and I have to buy every one of them. So, and watches.
I'm still trying to figure out how much of that is true.
No, it's true. If you click on one of those ads, you are doomed for the rest of your life. Forget it.
Well, see, I don't see those because I use an ad blocker like any sensible computer user.
There's an ad blocker?
Oh, boy.
Actually, for face, well, it works for Facebook ads, though?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
We need to talk.
We do. So I'll put that aside for now, but just remind me, Mike, when we're done to hit buy now.
Okay.
Buy
it all.
So thanks, folks, for joining us again. We can't believe we're still here, and I'm sure you feel the same way. But be that as it may, we've got a bunch of things to talk about tonight, obviously including some updates on Mike's end on his Basement Edition project. He also traveled to Pennsylvania last week, and he's going to talk about that. And then I've got a couple of things that I want to go over. So, but first and foremost, Mike, hi, how are you? How you doing? How was your Halloween? What'd you dress up as this year?
I dressed up as a person of Portuguese descent.
Ah, okay. All right. Well, that must have taken a lot of time, effort, and creativity on your part.
Oh, I worked up a real sweat.
Yeah, I'll bet you did. Now, you probably don't get many trick-or-treaters where you are.
I haven't had a trick-or-treater in over 20 years.
Really?
Yep.
Probably since the last time Jay went out trick-or-treating.
It was those landmines that we planted. They've really been effective.
The barbed wire and the landing craft deterrence worked as usual, I suspect.
You've got to have some serious trick-or-treating stones to come down my unlit, long, off-the-road lane here.
Yeah, you really do. We don't get anybody here, but at Tina's place, we must have had 100.
If anybody showed up here, I'd have to cook them a steak. I mean, I don't have
Well, I remember that next Halloween. I know where I'm going.
Really?
Yeah. I'll be dressed as a person of mixed heritage.
Which you are.
Big outfit with a question mark on it. Yes, and I have another funny story to tell you afterwards as well with regards to that. But anyway, so
I'm sure our listeners would love the fact that we keep all the funny stuff for
show. They assume that it's funny. It probably isn't any more funny than any of the rest of this stuff is. But we forge on. What's going on with the basement project?
Well, there's been some progress to the point where last week Dave and I started setting up for an op session, and I think I've decided that I'm going to do two op sessions before I tear anything apart. And I'm doing that for a couple of reasons. One, I just miss operating. It's just, you know, it's been way too long since I've operated here. And if I start tearing things apart now, it'll extend that time quite a bit. You know what I mean? So I think I want to get a couple op sessions under my belt before I go through another drought period.
Yep.
It'll also serve, I think, as a good way for the guys in the ops crew who have not seen the place to see it for the first time. And we're going to try to build in a little time to pick people's brains and try to get some ideas and feedback and just kind of vet the concept. And I'll talk a little bit more about that because my Pennsylvania trip had something to do with that as well.
Okay.
I think we've also decided that you know, not everybody can make it to every op session. So I think we're going to do a split Obsession, which is something we just did at Mike Confalone's last time, and everybody seemed to like it a lot. So it means you don't run every train in that Obsession, and you have a little bit more leisurely pace, and you try to leave it in such a fashion that the next time you operate, you just pick up where you left off. So I think we can do that here, the way the jobs are and the way we do things. I think we could easily do that. So I'm going to give that a bit of a go. And a lot of the people who can't make it to the first one can make it to the second one. So it'll serve I think a dual purpose.
Okay. All
So
right.
from an obsession standpoint, clearly things are in control enough that I can actually conceive of doing that. I got my last two inspections this last week, and so there's no more inspections, and it means I could do a few of the things here that I wanted to do that I didn't want to involve inspection, and that's all I'm going to say about that. It's nothing serious, but I just didn't want to muddy the waters at all. You want to sail through inspections, and that's just what I did.
Okay.
And then now I've opened up the new room to the old room. There's no doorway or partitions or anything there, so it's as one big a room as it's ever going to be. And just that fact alone, I think it's causing me to look at it slightly differently. I mean, I obviously had pictured that and then designed for that, but you can do anything you want on paper, but when you actually look at the space, I don't know about you, but it's completely different, from a visual standpoint. So that fact alone, the ability to stand finally in the whole space and interact with it the way that you would, without anything in the way.
Yep.
And the fact that I have the benefit of, in part, what I went to Pennsylvania for, is making me think, I think I want to just, vet things a little bit more with the brain trust, and officially get to that speak now or forever hold your peace part of the project, and part of the stuff that's driving that is that when I've talked with anybody who has come by, they always have a good idea that makes me think, hadn't thought about that.
So was there something specifically about the trip that made you stop and pause?
Well, let me get right into the trip, and I'll tell you what it was about. It was really a dual purpose trip. Part of it was that I wanted to re-attend the same slideshow that I went to last year, which is put on by the NRHS.
Yep.
And I think I must have talked about, the one I went to last year. It was just a surprisingly good gig. I thought it would be good, but it was really good. And not only is it useful for what you see in the actual slideshow, but it's really useful for making connections with people who know things that I don't know. I mean, it's the best way to put it. So the funny thing is, I was telling Mike Confalone about this guy I spoke with last year who knew a lot about the D&H because he was the Taylor Yard yardmaster. So
Okay.
obviously he knows a lot about the D&H, in particular D&H operations in or near my modeling area. So when I had mentioned that to Mike, he said, "What's the guy's name?" And of course I couldn't remember the guy's name. It was a year ago.
Yep.
But he said, see what the guy's name is and let me know while you're down there, because when I was in college, this is him speaking now, he says, when I was in college, I used to be calling the Taylor Yard yardmaster all the time, asking him for the lineup, seeing what's running, and this guy would answer and he'd say, so and so, Taylor Yard yardmaster. And he kind of imitated the way the guy said it. And so I said, all right, I'll see if, I don't even know if the guy's going to be there, but let me see what I can do. So as I was digging out stuff to bring with me for the trip, I ran across my notes from last year. And I know you're going to say, notes? Oh, come on. But the way modern memories are, when I started speaking with this guy, it was clear to me that this guy was going to give me a lot of really useful information, and it was going to be like drinking from a fire hose, and I was going to miss, 80% of it, and I didn't want to. So I said to the guy last year, I said, "Hang on a sec. I want to write down a couple of these things." And I grabbed a pad and just started writing down the stuff that the guy was telling me so that I wouldn't forget it. And when I found that pad, which I was going to bring with me again, it had the guy's first name, Jim.
Oh, no kidding.
And that's the same first name of the guy that Mike knew. So I was pretty sure it was going to be the same guy. And so Mike sent me an email that he wanted me to print and give to the guy. So before the thing even started, I recognized this guy, went over and chatted with him. He's just like one of the nicest guys you could ever talk to. Very accommodating and genial. And that's really been the case for so many of these people that I've met down there. Just nice people. And and I gave him the email, and he starts reading it, because he doesn't know what I'm handing him. I said, "A friend of mine wanted me to give you this." So he wrinkles his brow and he starts reading it, and then I see like this recognition come over his face, and he starts to nod, and he starts saying, "How about that?" And then he said to me, he says, "I remember this kid."
Oh, that's fantastic.
So
What a great story.
that was kind of cool. And he gave me his email address, and I'm sure that as he said, "Feel free to ask me any, email me with any questions that come up that you haven't thought about yet." And he says, "No problem at all. Happy to do it." So, it's things like that really make it like extra worth attending. The year before I had gone down to meet in person Mike Bednar, who has written so many articles on my modeling area and had been so personally helpful and accommodating to me with information that I needed. I think I mentioned one time that on the first inquiry, he sent me a 3-page handwritten response with two hand-drawn maps that are still among the best maps of the area that I've ever seen. And I mean, that's just the kind of interactions that I've been fortunate enough to have down there. So, plus they put on a good spread. They have, I don't know where they're getting these donuts, but they're tremendous. And then at the lunch buffet, they just put out a tremendous lunch buffet. I'm telling you, I mean, I'm not one of these, waddle up to the trough kind of guys, but you could definitely make a case for it here. Everything was great and freshly made and home cooked in the kitchen there. And it's just got it had real atmosphere. It's on top of the DuPont Hose Company, the fire department, and they have like a big hall upstairs, and that's where they have this thing. And there were at least 100 more people there this year than last year. The place was just packed, and it was great. Great presenters, guys like Richard John, who's done so many things for restoration. Bob Witt, who everybody recognizes his name probably that buys any slides on eBay. A very prolific photographer with great taste in terms of choice of subject. And on and on and on. One of the fellows even gave an update on the steamer restoration at Steamtown. So I was reluctant to mention that to you, but but actually, they he did a
Well,
nice a
I gotta
nice
stop you.
he
I
did
gotta
a
add
nice
that.
slide presentation on what they were doing right now and where it stands.
I gotta add that to our agenda at the end.
Okay.
Because I have an update as well.
The short story is that I guess the thing that seemed very interesting to me was how they took the tender completely apart, and then the frame went to the sandblast booth for sandblasting, because they're trying to get rid of all the rust. And he talked about what they had to do to remove, I guess on these trucks and a lot of the frame parts, it's held together with these pins, which are quite rusted in place, having been there forever. And they use this process called exothermic, I should have written it down, right? Exothermic something that they basically melt the pin and blow it away with oxygen, but it's not flame cutting, it's done with electric. So it's, you know, just really, and they can do it fairly precisely because obviously you don't want to be, you know, burning a big hole in the tender frame to get a pin out. You want to melt the pin out basically. So they were showing how they do that and how there's basically one guy there that knows how to do all of this stuff, and everybody else is a volunteer and is learning these techniques. So they took the trucks completely apart, and they showed how they, you know, how they drop them and take out the springs and all of that kind of thing. And they also showed how they were taking the drivers out. And I guess those have now been picked up in two tractor trailers and taken to,
Strasbourg.
yes, thank you.
Yep.
So, you know, I've heard descriptions of all of that, and you and I have talked about it a little bit, but it was actually a pretty good slide presentation showing all of these things in progress. I found it quite interesting. And that was the opening presentation, and everything else was just, you know, similarly well done slide presentations, all of historical interest, you know, all anthracite roads by people who really knew the subject. You know, in fact, I turned to Dave at one point and said, "Boy, talk about subject matter expert." You know, I mean, these people know what they're talking about there. So it was really worth doing just for that. And that was the Saturday. The other thing that I wanted to do while I was down there was I wanted to go to Binghamton. Now, since I can't remember what I talked about on any of the previous shows, I'll just reiterate that the reason for that is when Neil Schofield came over, he had an idea between him and Confalone. They had an idea for incorporating a portion of Binghamton into the railroad to give the tracks that would leave north from Taylor a place to go to instead of just having it, you know, immediately disappear and be off layout. And I was intrigued enough with that idea that I looked up the Conrail ZTS maps, and I was looking at the track arrangement there, and I could see how that might be a possible thing. But you know, I've always had good results from going to an area, even if it's, you know, many, many years into the future, obviously, and just seeing how it hits me, you know. That's really stood me in good stead with Pittston Junction, for example. Even though there have been many changes, it's the whole arrangement there is arguably not that different from my modeling era. So there's a great deal of benefit of going there, and for me, I just like to get the feel of the area. You know, it's the best way I could describe it. And I was hoping to do the same thing in Binghamton. And we were going to do that on the way down, but the weather was very rainy that day. So I said, you know what? It's supposed to be nice weather on Sunday. Let's reverse it. Instead of just coming home, we'll do the Binghamton thing on the way back. And that's just what we did. And you know, Dave had not seen Nicholson Viaduct, and neither one of us had seen Martin's Creek Viaduct, and neither one of us had been to Sturucka, believe it or not. So we also put those down as things to do on the way back, because who knows when or if we'd be that way again, as the saying
Sure,
goes, you know.
sure.
So we did all that, you know, and we basically took the instead of just taking 81 up to Binghamton, we took Route 11, which largely follows the tracks, and took that all the way up, and it only added, you know, another maybe half an hour or so to the trip. So it was well worth doing. And I'm glad I got to see all of those historic places, you know, because I didn't want to be the only guy who'd never been to Sturucka, for example. You know, it's kind of crazy when you think about it.
I've never been there.
Seriously?
Yeah.
All right, well, now you're the only guy who's never been to
I know.
Sturucka.
I know. I think it's interesting that you and I both do a fairly considerable, I have and you are doing a fairly considerable amount of research on the prototype in order to translate it to our modeling.
That's
And
kind of what prototype modeling is, right?
yeah, of course. But I think that there are degrees in which you can do it,
Oh yeah.
right? And I would say that you've got to be more thorough than most. And the fact that your prototype lies, 350 miles away, probably doesn't help your cause.
Well, you want to maximize the impact of every trip. But I will say that I think there's a lot of people who are much harder prototype modelers than I am. In other words, I think I know when to give myself a break because, the prototype wasn't built in a basement. So, I think I know by now where I want to make my compromises and what's important to me. And for some people, modeling the prototype to extreme fidelity is their ultimate goal. I'm not opposed to moving something on the layout that just doesn't physically fit there, even though it wasn't exactly there on the prototype. But on the other hand, the closer I've gotten my layout to the way it actually is, the happier I am about it because there's benefit from that. The prototype, in many ways, in many cases, did it a certain way for a reason. And if you can recreate a prototype track arrangement, you have the closest example of how to operate it prototypically. You're literally operating on the same track. When I took my ride on the Mehoopany local that time, these guys were doing the same thing we do here. It was amazing to me how close the experience was to what we do on the layout. I was very gratified by that. But I don't. I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't also want to be so rigid about it that I can't make enough of a compromise to have fun with it. You know what I mean? So, you're always trying to strike that balance. But the reason I wanted to go to Binghamton was to see. I mean, bear in mind now, Binghamton has changed a lot since 1984, both the city itself. The way what's operating there. I just kind of wanted to see if there was anything useful there that I could take with me,
Okay.
And to my surprise, the answer was not much. Binghamton, as the railroads are wont to do, as time goes on, railroads continue to restrict access, and Binghamton's no exception, and it's largely controlled by NS at this point, even though the Susquehanna there, even Susquehanna's controlled by NS and CSX, right? So, a lot of these pictures, these historic pictures that you see, you can't get into those places and take those pictures. You know what I mean? And
Right.
it's changed enough that even if I could, they wouldn't be terribly useful to me. You know what I mean? So I just wanted to see if I could kind of get a feel for the city. I know that's I keep overusing that term, but it's kind of an elusive thing. Sometimes, like when I went to Pennsylvania and I zeroed in on my modeling area, I really felt like I just kind of got the feeling of that area when I went down there, and that's what made me want to model it. Wasn't able to really do that in Binghamton. It was just an annoying, difficult place to navigate that when I finally did get around to the spots where I could get to, they wasn't worth the trouble. You've probably seen pictures of the big Agway feed mill in Binghamton. I don't know if you have, but it's kind of like a classic structure there. It's not even an Agway anymore, and in fact, we couldn't even see any tracks indicating that it was rail served anymore. It's got a big Purdue sign on it.
Interesting.
Like the chickens.
Yeah,
So
yeah.
I don't know really what's going on with that. I don't know why Purdue would need an elevator in Binghamton. You know what I mean? I don't know. If anybody knows anything about that,
Well, maybe it's for chicken feed.
let
Maybe
us.
they've got a chicken farm there.
Yeah, I mean, I really thought all that was down south. It was just
No.
no.
No, Purdue has chicken farms all over the
Oh,
place. In
well,
fact,
knowing that alone explains it, I think.
there was one. I don't know if it's still there. Somewhere down off of Route 24 near you.
Oh, come on.
I'm dead serious. Now this was like back in the 70s. So again, I have no idea if it would still be there.
Really?
Yep.
I never smelled it.
Well, I think it was probably far enough north from you that you might not have, but
Believe me, I've been in some of those towns down south where it's all chickens, and boy, you know they're there.
yeah. So what I was getting at with regards to the research is you model summer.
Yes.
However, you've been to Pennsylvania in different seasons to do research.
Sure.
When you go at a different time of year other than summer, do you get a different feel for the same areas? Do you
Yeah,
get a different perspective?
I think so. The leaves hide a lot, so when you go off season, it's transparent almost. You know what I mean? Like you see stuff that you didn't even know was there. And of course, the tracks are all the same, and the buildings and all of that are the same. So basically, it's the fact that the leaves aren't hiding things. That was the most obvious difference. It's not useful for taking backdrop photos, which that I'm always interested in capturing photos that could be useful for that when I go down there. So it's one of the reasons why I like to go down in June when the days are longest, and that's really where the light and everything looks like what I'm trying to capture here. You know what I mean? So, but just being in your modeling area, it just helps me reconnect with it somehow, It reminds me of things maybe that maybe have fallen off the burner a little bit, and sometimes you just notice something, 'cause it's a lot to notice when you're modeling a whole area like that. Sometimes you just notice something you didn't notice previously, And the other thing is, of course, is that as I'm expanding the modeled area, I'm going to be building places that I'm not as familiar with as the places I've already built, if that makes sense. So there, I could justify more than one visit down there to continue to get it in my head, So the earliest visits here have been to sort of get an operational scheme, to decide where these tracks are going to go, how they're going to go, and have some idea how you're going to build it. And then I think I could justify, once the tracks are in place and you've operated with it a little bit and hopefully like how it's going, I think additional trips to photograph more scenes and there's things that are more about the flavor and look of the area, scenery and what have you. I mean, I think I could justify several more of those kinds of trips as I start to scenic the railroad,
Absolutely. So for me, modeling not only a bygone era but a long bygone era, I found that in researching Vermont, it was much better for me to, if I were researching a place for the first time, to do it the first opportunity after the leaves were off the trees. And the reason is because I'm looking for things. I'm almost like an archaeologist when I go up there. I'm looking for remnants of things that don't exist anymore. Foundations, things that I can base measurements off of, things that are partially buried, things that are tossed into the woods and discarded. I want to see where old, sidings were, old right of ways were, things like that. And it's just a lot easier to do that when you're not stumbling through the briars.
Oh yeah, no, I can certainly see that. And what era are we talking about for you?
Well, when I had my
Because I
layout, it
still
was.
think of you as a Penn Central guy, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so the Rutland layout was based in 1935.
Okay.
But the thing with the Rutland layout was that even though it was 1935, it could have been any time during steam, well, 35 was before they bought their last large steam locomotives, their mountains. But so anytime before 41 or 42, really.
Well, how are you going to run that transfer caboose that the kids are going to ride on?
Well, that takes me back to the Penn Central, but still a bygone era, right? And as an example of that, a close buddy of mine, in fact, the buddy that I used to ride the transfer caboose with, came up a few years ago. He lives in Connecticut now, and we were, walking around the woods near the Franklin train station, and it was fall, and the leaves were off the trees, and we really kind of discovered this otherworldly place on the other side of the tracks, where evidently there was at least one, and more than likely two or more coal dealers there. And complete with the foundations for the coal trestles.
Was there, were the coal remnants there also?
There were coal remnants. It's all overgrown. It's a sunken down area. It's well below the level of the main line. And we had never seen any photographic evidence of it, but we found evidence of it. And we just happened to stumble upon it. He's done quite a bit of research, and found quite a bit of printed matter, that led us to believe that it was possible that that track work had existed, but it probably has been gone for 70 years or so.
Well, it's interesting how you describe what you do up there, because I should mention that we rendezvoused with another buddy of ours, Ken Karlowitz, down there. And I don't know if you've met Ken or not, but he's a very, very accomplished photographer, and he's building a phenomenal D&H layout at his house. And he's also an excellent modeler. He's got a real artist's eye, and he's doing some gorgeous scenes with where he's capturing like all the right elements, but he's a phenomenal photographer. So he was going to be basically doing what we were doing that day, but of course, because we met him down there, he had his own car, and we kept losing the guy, and we kept losing him because he's getting his eye is catching things that he wants to photograph for his purposes that have nothing to do with what I was trying to accomplish that day. So at some point, I said, "You know what, Ken? All of these places like Starucker and all of that, I mean, you've seen all of that, and I'm looking at, a 4:30 sunset because of obviously the difference between Sunday and Friday is the
Right,
clocks move
right,
back, right?"
right.
So I said, "We have to press on to Binghamton here. So you do what you got to do, and we'll catch up with you." He said he hadn't been to Binghamton in over 20 years, so it wasn't like he was going to be our guide or anything. You know what I mean?
Sure,
But
sure.
he, but you know what you were describing reminds me a lot of what he does, and it's kind of what I was trying to describe when I said that once I get to the stage where I want to be sceneking and detailing the newer sections, I'll be hopefully able to revisit down there multiple times with that in mind,
The great thing about discovering this stuff is finding that in a lot of cases there's stories attached to, what once existed.
Always, right?
And again, I'll use an anecdote locally. In my hometown, there's a large mill complex, and it was powered by coal. And you can see that the remnants of the coal trestle. It wasn't a particularly big, the trestle itself wasn't particularly big, but what made it interesting was that when the coal was dumped through the trestle onto the ground below, it was shoveled into this octagonal shed. And the shed
Was that
had,
concrete by any chance?
I'm sorry?
Was it concrete?
No, it was actually. Actually, what it was tin siding.
Really?
Yeah.
Why didn't it blow up? burst.
I don't know.
Huh.
I don't know. I have no idea. And then there were tracks that were, I don't know, a foot, 18 inches apart, where you could push a cart from this shed into the boiler room.
Wow.
And the neat story that goes with it is that the high school football coach used to send the football players down there in the summer as a workout to shovel the coal.
Jeez. Yeah, that's a pretty good exercise.
So the shed finally caved in after a bad winter a few years ago. But before it did, I was able to capture it in pictures and dimensions and include it in the first structure kit I did, the backwards roundhouse. And it was, I mean, it was just this old, really weird looking building that just kind of had a neat little story to it.
Well, that's exactly the kind of stuff that Ken's always on the lookout for, and generally finds it because he's relentless.
Now, with regards to perspective, I've also had the opportunity, and this was a completely different perspective, of seeing the Rutland, or the antecedents of the Rutland, under blizzard conditions.
Yeah, you wouldn't generally get me out of the basement under those conditions.
Well, I can tell you that I got a real keen sense of what it must have been like to work on the railroad.
Yeah, bad.
Bad. Running a night train, when it's, 10 below 0 and, complete whiteout conditions.
I remember Jim Lincoln telling me how when he was working for CSX and on a Boston line train, and they broke a knuckle, and he'd have to find it. And he's talking minimum waist deep snow, and it's an auto rack train, so he's walking car after car after car through waist deep snow with a knuckle which weighs about 60 pounds. And then kind of like burrowing into it to get to the point where he could replace it. He said those nights were very unglamorous.
I'll bet. I'll bet that the joys of railroading. So let's move on.
Well, I just wanted to finish one more Pennsylvania trip anecdote because it was a hell of a trip. So after the slideshow was done, some of the guys there had told us about this Hudson Model Railroad Club, and Hudson was really just down, 10 minutes away, really, just down the highway. Hudson Yard was Wilkes-Barre, and most of the yard is basically gone now. But this Model Railroad Club is in a building adjacent to the yard, which must have been railroad related at some point, and I did, you never know what to expect, but we went there to check it out. And once again, some of the nicest people, just so accommodating and graciously opened the place and showed us everything they were doing, even though they were doing track work in preparation for their winter open house. So it was a really large layout. I mean, maybe not Providence Northern large, but a really good size layout, and quite elaborate and quite far along. And I actually took a couple of pictures from the dispatcher's booth, which was like up a little ship's ladder on a balcony in the corner. So I'll throw a picture or two, if they look okay, onto the podcast group, along with the web page for the club. Their web page has the dates that they're open, and they're open several dates in November and several dates in December, Saturdays and Sundays mostly, and some Mondays. But I think anybody in that area would probably get a kick out of seeing the club, if they can pay the price of admission, which is of course zero. So it's a great value.
Okay, absolutely, yeah. Interesting. So before I got a couple of things on my agenda, but one of the things that I just added was a week ago Friday, I attended an op session at Dick Elwell's house.
Ah.
And
One of
it
those
was
short notice spontaneous ones?
no, actually I had a couple of weeks notice, but I kept missing them and missing them, and it had been a full year since the last one I had been to. So
And your
I was
baseball season is officially over, of course,
baseball
right?
season is over,
Yep.
which means that I'm now in the off season, which means that I'm working out with the trainer 4 days a week. And I'm pretty certain, Mike, that he's trying to kill me.
No, you said that last time, and I believe it.
Yeah, well, it's only ramped up. So there's a good chance that I won't be around for the next podcast, folks.
But if you make it, just think what kind of shape you'll be in next year.
Well, yeah. Or I'll be dead. So,
Right.
right, exactly. So I was able to get up there. It was an interesting session because he had a fairly inexperienced crew, especially when it came to his layout as far as operators go. It was a group from Albany, New York. Among them, Kip Grant, who's a very well-known modeler from that area.
Kip's a customer of mine. I've done numerous installs for him.
Very nice guy. First time I met him in person. And I was also I felt like I was also a newbie in the session. I was given a job that I'd never done before.
Didn't think that was possible there.
And it's one of the smaller yards. And what happened was we had all these new operators that just it was like kind of herding cats to get them to wait their turn, buy myself some time to do the switching I had to, free up a mainline track. It was really a little bit of a circus, and I think Dick will probably reassign me the next time around, so that I don't get in that situation again. But
Is that kind of work something you enjoy doing, or would you rather not?
I generally like it. I've worked Berkshire Junction, which is the big yard there, a number of times, and I'm fairly comfortable with it. But a lot of the success that you have as a yard master has a lot to do with who is running trains outside of the yard and
Yeah,
how
although
they.
that also comes down to who's dispatching and how they're doing it, too.
Yeah, and there are really only a couple of guys that ever dispatch on and during Dick's operating sessions, and they both are very, very good at what they do. This was, I think, just a case of newer guys, and like I say, I really wasn't doing a great job myself. I was a little flummoxed, I guess is probably a good description. Just based on the chaos that was going around
Well,
all around me.
what was the main difficulty? Just too many things coming into your yard at once?
Yeah, I had two or three trains backed up in each direction.
Jeez. So you
And
weren't classifying fast enough.
so well, I couldn't. There was no way to. And you got a main line, two passing sidings, and one of the passing sidings also acts as a runaround track for the switching that goes on within the industrial part of the yard. So I've got to move cars around to set them out for freights that are coming through to pick them up. I've also got to get their drop-offs the hell out of the way. In the meantime, I need two of the tracks, and I've got a mainline train sitting there that's going in one direction with two trains going in the other direction on the other side of it. So,
Well, see, what the kind of thing you're describing there is in large part actually, which that was driving Confalone's decision to slow the session down, split things up, not run as many trains, try to enjoy the process a little more, and not make Joe Posick, the yard master, nuts, you know. And it was very successful. I think if you'd had more control of the externals, you might have had a chance there.
And again, a lot of that was also my unfamiliarity with that particular job. So I'll take my share of the blame. But the common denominator in all of Dick's operating sessions is how well the layout runs. Everything just and the better the layout runs, the easier it is for new operators to assimilate themselves to the process.
Oh, sure. They're not dealing with problems. They just run the trains. He also operates a lot, and I think one of the cliches is the more you operate a layout, the better it runs. So his layout, he operates fairly regularly, doesn't he?
Well, he had operating sessions 2 weeks in a row. But I mean, generally speaking, I would say every 6 to 8 weeks. And there are periods of the year where, it's a lot closer together than even that.
Well, I gotta say, I was very happy when I turned my layout on and it worked just fine.
Well, and that's the thing, right? I
It
mean,
should, but that didn't mean that it would.
you never know.
Right.
There's some, I don't know, wizardry that goes on, if you don't run it enough. Where like it develops some kind of layout illness.
Malaise, yep. Layout malaise, yep.
So it was a good time, and I hope to get back up there again soon. I Kip pulled me aside and he said, you guys need to get together on another project, and I agree. I'd love to build another structure. Speaking of that Boston and Maine Pacific at Steamtown, I talked to Jim Corcoran, in fact, while I was driving up to Dick Elwell's house, and he had been in touch with some of the folks that are directly involved with the restoration of 3713. And he had mentioned that it had kind of gotten to a point where they were really, really struggling, which seemed obvious just because it's been 25 years now that they've been working on this thing. And I won't go into a rant, but that comment in and of itself is a bit of a rant. And I guess the problems with the tender were fairly severe. The cistern had to be completely rebuilt. You mentioned those pins. That was a big issue. And the bigger problem was just they didn't have the skilled labor to do it. And so they were faced with, either never finishing this thing or sending it to Strasbourg. And so they've sent, as you mentioned, they've sent parts of it to Strasbourg to be worked on. I guess the boiler is in pretty good shape. The issue, I guess, right now is mostly with the tender, and you mentioned that the drivers are being trued up, and Jim said to me, because I asked the $1 million question, well, when is the time frame for finishing this project? Is there one at this point? And he said they're saying 2 years.
I was just going to say the same thing. That's basically what they were saying. They were saying there's enough of it that's done that they can look at it and say, okay, now we have a sense of what remains to be done and how long it'll take. And it looks like 2 years is, believe it or not, realistic.
So hopefully that's true. I
So
mean,
you might live to see it run.
yeah, I might live to eat my words. So we'll
That's a
see.
bet that you didn't make that you want to lose, right?
No, no one wants to see this thing run more than me, and it certainly will be a testimony to a group of people's endurance and will to see something through. Because I think a lot of organizations would have scrapped this plan a long, long time ago, given all of the obstacles that it faced. So I give them credit. So we're barreling down the rails towards Christmas, and I put on my Christmas list this year a structure kit, which I have not really considered for many, many moons.
You mean making one for sale?
No, oh no, please.
I would have raised an eyebrow at that.
No, under no circumstances. In fact, my buddy Brett Gallant at Sierra West Model Works just recently released a new kit in O scale. I took a look at this thing and said, I need this.
O scale?
So it would just be a diorama.
Yeah. It'd be therapy.
It's therapy. And so there were no, I, you know, you can't beat his kits for, that, over kind of over detailed, quaintness. But his castings are just so incredible. This particular building is called O'Neill's Fabrication, and it's named after a gentleman named Kevin O'Neill, who passed away. I don't know, it was probably 5 or 6 years ago now, on 2013, 5 years ago. Died of cancer, and just a really, really nice guy. I had a chance to know him very well. He's from Connecticut, and he was in the construction trades. He was a Finnish carpenter, and he was very skilled, and he had never ever built anything in terms of models in his life. And he just decided to build a fine scale miniature kit, and he was winning contests with this model, first time out of the chute. And he was really, really a fantastic, thoughtful, skilled modeler, a real
Sounds
artist.
like the kind of guy you want doing your Finnish carpentry.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you could tell that this guy was, he knew his stuff. Brett had named this particular kit after him, and
It's a nice tribute.
it is a nice tribute. And it's unfortunate that we have to do tributes like that. Like I say, Kevin was a great guy, and when I think back to a lot of the friends that I've made in the hobby, he's someone who I'll always remember, very personable and friendly. So if anybody's interested in seeing it, if you go to the Sierra West Scale Models website, and it's sierrawestscalemodels.com, you can take a look. If you've got a hankering just to build something kind of neat and unique, I know it's, most of us are probably prototype modelers that are listening to this podcast, so it doesn't really necessarily fit in with anything that we do. But boy, I'll tell you do a nice job building something like this, and display it as a diorama, it becomes a real conversation piece. So take a look.
Sounds interesting.
I also had an opportunity, and maybe we can wrap up with this, in my travels of stopping by the Hopedale lumber facility in the Grafton and Upton last week, Mike.
Oh, what's new and interesting there?
I don't know where they're putting all this stuff. I have, this is such a, I mean, we've been there a number of times together. This is such a little railroad.
Right.
They had well over 20 lumber flat cars
Jeez.
down there. They had wrapped up lumber stacked probably 20 feet high. I'm sure OSHA would have had a fit. They wandered down there. There was not room to step anywhere. All of the lumber cars that they had were loaded. They hadn't unloaded them yet, and the reason they hadn't unloaded them was because there was no place to put the stuff.
Wow, and at this time of year, you wouldn't think you'd be ramping up on building, right?
Well, I don't know. I honestly don't know the answer to that. I mean, maybe it's stuff that's going down south. But I would suspect, knowing how that railroad operates, that within a week or so, all those cars were unloaded and all that lumber was gone, trucked out of there.
Jeez. Well, it's probably covering a pretty good geographical area.
Well, it's stuff that's all coming down from Canada, and I think you're right. I think it's probably being dispersed pretty widely across the country. I think, the average person who sees this, in their passings probably has no idea of the scope.
Right.
But
Did
what
you
a gold mine.
get over by the propane terminal?
I did not. I drove on the main drag that goes by it, but I was in a little bit of a hurry at the time and just didn't have an opportunity to pull in. But the other thing too is that the last couple of times I'd pulled in there, that parking lot that you pull into was completely loaded with pallets of wood pellets.
At the propane place?
Oh, you're talking about North Grafton. No, I'm talking about West Upton.
Okay. Where the silos were, yeah.
Yes. So I haven't been up to North Grafton in a while, so I can't vouch. But the West Upton facility is completely slammed, not only in terms of wood pellet production, but I think you had mentioned this, they're adding tracks
Right. At the
to
transload.
the transloading facility, yeah. And they're going to double the capacity in there.
Yeah, I was just, if you find yourself in the neighborhood again, it would be interesting to see on some of these places if you can discern, more truck traffic or, more railroad cars at the propane place. I remember they were talking about, I forget what he said, how many per day, but this was a daily switch of propane cars, wasn't it?
Oh my God, yeah. Yeah,
Right.
it has to be. I
So,
mean, there were over, the last time I counted, there were well over 40. Oh, the propane. Yeah. I
no,
was
not the
talking
tent,
about.
not the transload, but I mean up in North Grafton.
Yeah.
I was just curious to see how that was all, going, because when we went there, it was just on the verge of opening. It hadn't really opened yet.
Yeah. So there were, the last time I went there were four, there's four tracks. There were four tank cars per track. So that's something like 17 cars.
Right.
And they're moving them out. They're unloading them as fast as they can and moving them out and pumping the propane from the tanks into trucks and off they go. And
They've got some new motive power too since we were up there. So, maybe we should revisit it in the spring. I don't think you'll pry me out of here in the winter, but if you're in the neighborhood.
nor me neither. But yeah, and I have been. It's just been a question of, taking a left instead of a right.
Yep.
So I'll have to motivate myself. That's all I've got for tonight, Mike.
Cool. Well, that was certainly it seems like it's been a very busy month, because when I looked at the calendar and said, "Hey, it's time to record again," I thought, "Wow, that went by fast."
Yeah, it was a fast month, but I'm glad we caught up. And folks, thank you as always for joining us and listening. And in fact, one of the gentlemen that I met at the operating session came up to me and said, "Hey, I listen to your podcast, and I pulled the old Dave Frary line. Oh, you're the one." And so,
Well,
but it was,
do you have his name? We can say hello.
I believe it was Mark.
Okay, Mark. Well, nice that you're a listener.
And if it's not Mark, I apologize. So, but it was a pleasure meeting you regardless.
You can
So,
see why I write things down.
yep. All right, folks, we'll look forward to talking to you next month.
See you then.